Do you want to know what this podcast is? I imagine that right now, you're feeling a bit like Alice, tumbling down the rabbit hole, Do you believe in fate, listener? Let me tell you why you're here. You are here because we formed opinions on something. Podcasters Assemble is everywhere. We are all around you, even now in this very room. You hear us when you put on your headphones or log into Patreon. You can feel us when you go to work. This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. Press skip. The story ends. You wake up at your job and believe whatever you want to believe. You press play. You stay in Wonderland, and we show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. Remember, all we're offering you are our opinions, nothing more. No one can be told what Podcasters Assemble is. You must experience it for yourself.
Hey gang, it's me here, and I've got a little confession to make before we start this episode, which is a bit of a special episode. I never finished my Let's Play of Saga, or the Final Fantasy Legend for the Game Boy. So I got quite far into the game, as per the last episode, and you may have noticed towards the end of the last episode, I was complaining about this weird glitch I was getting, and the glitch almost completely broke my playthrough of the game. And I explain that more in the episode that's coming up, but basically, yeah, once I eventually fixed it, I kind of just decided to plow through it. Because at the time, my co-host on my other show at the time, RPG The Golden Years, which is now RPG The After Years, and Rich is still on that show, and I still contribute a lot to that show as well. He'd already finished the game. He was waiting on me to finish it so that we could review it. And I was just like, oh, I've got this weird glitch. I've got to fix it. I eventually fixed it. I was just like, I'm just going to plow through this. So I just sat down one evening and just went through it. I didn't do my Let's Play. So I do apologize for that, but just a little bit of explanation to that. But as a nice little bonus for you guys, instead of the final Let's Play, I'm going to give you the full review that myself and Rich did. So that's what you've got coming up, guys. I hope you enjoy it. It's a very good review. I'm very proud of it. I'm proud of a lot of my reviews that I've done on the show over the years. Because that's what I feel like the RPG After Years, RPG Golden Years, that's what we do well. We give you really in-depth reviews of all these games that we play and beat over the years. And, you know, I'm very, very proud of what we do over there. So, yeah, I'm going to hand you over to past Rich and past Bill and enjoy the review of Saga, the Final Fantasy Legend. I need a saga. What's a saga? It's the Final Fantasy Legend! Yeah, Bill, woo, Rich, woo, great review, yeah. I don't know. I'll just make shit up as I go along. Right, listen to the review. Bye.
Hello, and welcome to the RPGy review of the Final Fantasy Legend.
Hey.
We're here, and it's a review show.
I know.
Oh, I'm so excited. So excited. All right. So, and this is fresh off the heels for you, isn't it, Rich? I think it's been less than 24 hours since you actually finished the game.
Yep. Totally done.
So that was a bit of a mad rush for you, wasn't it, yesterday?
Yeah, it was, actually.
Sorry to put that pressure on you, dude.
Nah.
I just wanted to get this one bat out the park. Or hit it for six, as we say over here.
Yeah, well, we did it.
Yeah, we did it. We've done it, guys. We beat a really short Game Boy game.
Yeah.
So, we don't actually have much to report as far as the normal show goes.
No?
No. Well, other than the fact that we beat Saga, the first Saga game. Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't tweet out the Battle Royales, so we'll save those for next week. Okay. But we are going to be moving on to Star Ocean. So you've been playing a little bit of Star Ocean, haven't you, Rich?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Not too much of it. And, you know, I did a little bit of a grind in it for like a couple of hours or so, but then I stopped because I didn't want to get too far ahead and forget this whole storyline.
Yes, that's a good point. I've played about 3.5 hours now. I've cleared out the pirate cave, and I've gotten a boat to the next continent part. So I'm sort of, you know, I'm chugging through nicely. It's nice to just sit on the train and play a game and not have to talk about it.
Yes.
As much as I like my Let's Plays, it's kind of nice just to sit there and quietly enjoy a game in my own time. Okay then, Rich, let's get to this, yeah?
Yes.
So here we are. We are reviewing the Final Fantasy Legend. And the Final Fantasy Legend, Rich, you're going to love this. It was released in North America 10,355 days ago on September 30th, 1990. And it's now 28 years old.
Oh, it's a long time.
It's a long time. It's about 5 years younger than me. And so on the 30th of September, do you know what was playing in the US charts? Do you know what was number one?
Something stupid, probably.
Probably. It was Nelson Can't Live Without Your Love and Affection.
I don't even know.
It's just like women in bikinis dancing around. They've all got really long blonde hair. Yeah, that's what you guys are up to.
Oh my god, look at that hair.
I know, that hair is amazing.
That is okay. So you know back in the 80s and the 80s had the hair metal bands,
yep.
You know, had all long hair. That was honestly just two frat boys. Like, you know what? We can't do metal songs, but guess what? We're going to do love songs. We're going to grow our hair out.
We're going to grow our hair out, man. Yeah. That was a sight to behold. I think that's going to be forever imprinted on my eyes, mate.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But in the UK, we were listening to Show Me Heaven by Mariah McKee. So I'll just give you a little bit of this here. Well, I think the key here is, Rich, is that both America and the UK were both deeply in love, obviously.
Had big
love songs at number one.
I know. You're so lonely.
I mean, in other news, you know, the Chicago White Sox beat Seattle 2-1 in the last game at Comiskey Park.
Okay.
I don't know what that is. The Pittsburgh Pirates win the NL East League, whatever that is.
Yep, that's the National League East title.
What is that?
That's baseball. Ice hockey?
Oh, baseball. And in more important news, this is like the only major thing I could find that happened on this day, the same day that Final Fantasy Legends was released. The Dalai Lama unveils the Canadian tribute to human rights in Canada's capital city of Ottawa.
Yeah, Canada.
Canada. I know, but they got the Dalai Lama out, you know. They shipped him over from Tibet. I love that guy and his bald head. Did you know he actually punched Muhammad Ali?
Like for real punched him or just
Real punched him.
Just like, eh.
Yeah. He's never hurt a living creature in his life. Muhammad Ali convinced him to punch him.
Well, I think Muhammad Ali wasn't he? I think he was part of their religion.
Muhammad Ali was a Muslim.
Was he?
Yeah, that was the whole point. What was his name? Cassius Clay. And then I think he became a Muslim and changed his name to Muhammad Ali.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but he was a great advocate for peace, you know. good old Muhammad Ali, you're sorely missed. Oh, God, that was this year, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a couple of years ago he passed away.
Oh, poor old Muhammad Ali. I loved him. What a guy. What a guy. Yes, but we're not here to talk about the politics and what happened in 1990 and the Dalai Lama, although I'd love to talk about the Dalai Lama in length. We're here to talk about the final, the fantasy, and the legend, otherwise known as Saga! Saga 1. So, I'm going to get a little bit into the history now, Rich. So, the history of the Final Fantasy Legends. Now, I'm going to give a big shout out first. This is thanks to Sean Musgrove. This was a... I've basically just plagiarised a blog that he did. I took his blog and I've ripped it. I've just cut it down a little bit to make it a bit shorter. But yeah, there's a lot of good...
We steal stuff. We don't do our own research.
I didn't steal it. I asked him. I have proof. It's okay. I said, hey man, your article on this was really good. Do you mind if I just like rip it off? And he's like, yeah, sure. So a big shout out, Sean. Thank you very much. Sean's an absolute legend. He's helped me out in the past with Final Fantasy, the four job fiesta when I've got stuck at times. Guy really knows his shit when it comes to Game Boy games. But yes, so to get into it. So after the success of the Game Boy and its initial launch in Japan, it drew a lot of attention around the game industry. And so Square's president at the time, see if I could say this, Masafumi Miyamoto, he saw Game Boy hardware and he saw games like Tetris absolutely selling like hotcakes. And so he asked his developers to make a Game Boy game. But he was actually thinking, make me a Tetris. But enter Akitishi Kawazu. I should know this one, Rich. Can you say that? Akitoshi Kawazu.
Sure.
Yeah, this is the guy, basically. This is the man. He designed the battle system originally for the first Final Fantasy game, and he'd been in charge of much of Final Fantasy II's design, which is a big sign for his love of oddball leveling systems. Final Fantasy II's battle system is certainly out there. His team numbered just over 10 people and included staff who had worked on Square's Tom Sawyer and Final Fantasy games. Among them was Koichi Ishii, who is a frequent collaborator of Kawazu's. We need a nickname for this guy, man. I'm going to call him Kawa. So the Final Fantasy Legend was designed from a from the ground up with the Game Boy in mind. So the system's battery life had to be taken into account, along with the fact that some players would be putting in long sessions while others might not. No one had ever made a handheld Game Boy, a handheld RPG before. So all of these sort of considerations were new challenges to the team. Also, the Game Boy cartridges at the time could only hold 2 megabits of data, and the system could only display 4 shades of grey. So not 50, 4.
Whoa.
Yeah, I'll squeeze that one in there. Square wanted the game's length to be about 8 hours. Do you think you managed to do this in 8 hours, Rich?
Hell no.
No, it's a bit longer than that. That number was based on nothing more than how long it took to fly from Narita in Japan to Honolulu in Hawaii. I assume that was a popular place to fly to in the 80s. Or it was probably where all the Square team used to go on holiday. But yeah, so the idea was that you could play the whole game through on one set of batteries. Final Fantasy Legend also included a feature that that let players save anywhere at any time, which wasn't very common in the games back then. But that was to allow for players who would have shorter gaming sessions. So, if you just pick up, play it quickly and put it back down. They also gave a high encounter rate for the game, so that if a player only picked it up for a few minutes, you could count on at least having like one battle to have a bit of fun with. Now, personally, I didn't think the encounter rate was that bad.
What? Are you kidding me?
No, I thought it was all right. I thought it was nice and paced.
No. I could battle somebody, get out of that battle, take one step, boom, another one.
Oh man, I used to get like I could do like entire floors without getting into a fight.
I mean, yeah, we get that occasionally too, but still.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I didn't think it was that horrendous, but yeah, apparently it was. They upped it compared to what the other games were like. And with regards to the Game Boy's hardware limitations, the development team behind Final Fantasy Legend tends to speak of them as an obstacle that needed to be worked around. It's been mentioned that certain elements, such as fire, were difficult to get across in the monochrome display, and that the size of the cartridge meant that many things had to be cut from the final game. Yeah, because I did find that kind of strange. Like, some spells would have animations and some wouldn't. And sometimes you'd attack and it'd be like a slice, and sometimes it wouldn't. So they just sort of seem to have randomly just gone, all right, take those 10 out. We won't use those ones because we can't fit them on the cartridge. and then they also had to create a world that looked good in black, that looked and worked well in black and white. They needed to do it while conserving as much memory as possible. In spite of the tight memory screens squeeze, the team was able to fit in composer's Nobuo Uematsu's 16-track soundtrack, and thank God they did. Although I have to say on the soundtrack, there's a lot of the tracks. I think Nobuo reuses them later on in games. I'm sure there's a track here which is in Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah,
and
I think so.
And there's definitely one from Final Fantasy III because I did that on my I compared it on one of my Let's Plays. So the game released in Japan under the name Maka Itoshi Saga on the December 15th, 1989, and it was warmly received in its home country, scoring well with critics and players alike. The game would also go on to sell 1.09 million copies in Japan. This is really? This is 1989, man. Well, you know, end of 1989, but 100.09 million copies. That's insane. Making it the first third-party Game Boy to crest the £1 million mark in sales. And I haven't got it here, but apparently the next game to crest the £1 million mark was in 1998, and it was like Dragon Quest Monsters or something.
Okay.
So, you know, that was like nearly 10 years that this was the only £1 million selling Game Boy game that wasn't made by Nintendo. it was also, and it was also Square's very first £1 million selling game, exceeding the sales of Final Fantasy and Final Fantasy II at the time. So, yeah, in Japan, this was released just before Final Fantasy III. The success of this game not only led to further Game Boy projects from Square, but also kicked off a new brand for the company. And a little side note, the founder of the developer Game Freak, which you may know, they make all the Pokemon games, Shetoshi Tajiri, has cited the game as the source of the inspiration for the company's Pokemon series. So Pokemon was actually inspired by this game, Rich.
Look at that. Square Enix, or Squaresoft, whatever it is.
Inspiring people.
You're welcome, people, for your Pokemon games because of them.
Yeah, because of this specifically. he quoted this game specifically as being the inspiration. Ah, good stuff, good stuff. And then the English translation was completed in March of 1990. Now, this is interesting because obviously it was completed in March, but the game wasn't released till September. So it was completed in March of 1990, at which time the game was planned to be released later in the year under the title The Great Warrior Saga. So that's what the name should have been, Rich, The Great Warrior Saga. Nintendo's moderately successful marketing blitz for the May 1990 North America release of Final Fantasy on the NES, NES, and generally favorable response from players of the game convinced Squaresoft to take advantage of the buzz and rebrand their upcoming Game Boy RPG to The Final Fantasy Legend on September 30th, 1990. So it took a couple of years for Final Fantasy 1 to, you know, make its way from Japan to America, but because it did well in America just before they were going to release The Great Warrior Saga, they rebranded it to include the Final Fantasy title. And that's why we have all this confusion. It's a saga game, but it's actually a Final Fantasy game. But it's not a Final Fantasy game. It's a saga game. What's the saga, Rich?
I don't know.
It's the Final Fantasy Legend. So the localized version had some minor changes made to both its content and balance, but for the most part, it stayed quite faithful to the Japanese version. So that's the history, Rich. That's again, big thanks to Sean for letting me rip off most of your work. Yep. Most of your hard work and research. But yes, we're going to get into the game now, Rich. So, what do you know about Saga?
Some bad stuff happens. I got to go find some things, and then I climb a tower. That's a short, condensed version of
it. That is a short, condensed version. So, the setting of the game, it takes place on several worlds, which are centered around a large tower. This was all built by the creator, who was called God in the Japanese version. And it was built in ancient times to link worlds. There are four unique worlds, four unique major worlds that make up the different layers of the tower. So you've got the world of continent, which exists at the base of the tower, the world of ocean, which is on the fifth floor, world of sky on the 10th, and the world of ruins on the 16th. Now, time does not flow consistently between the different levels, which is why some are more technically advanced than others. And various monsters come forth from the tower into each world. Some are hostile, but many of them are friendly to humans and willing to coexist, which is why you help a king have sex with an eye monster. I'll come back to that later. an offshoot of the human race, which are called mutants, also exist in each world, and they are magically attuned descendants of a union between humans and the world of continent's older races. So that's kind of a breakdown of what's actually going on in the game. That's kind of your setting. That's where you are. You're in a big tower. There's a bunch of, you know, monsters and humans having sex with each other. It's all a bit messed up. So the gameplay, it's just like, you know, standard RPG stuff. Walk, yep. Talk, kill things.
Basically.
But you have four classes of characters. Now, do you want to take one of the classes, Rich?
Sure. Humans. You buy the HP, strength, and agility to level up. No mana, 8 item slots.
Yep, pretty much. So the humans, they're a good bunch. they don't have any leveling whatsoever through battles. You have to buy everything from the shops. So you have to buy HP ups, strength and agility ups. And also, Rich, the really annoying thing was with all of these is that it gives you a random boost.
Yeah.
There was a guy that I saw, which was like, to maximize the efficiency of your stuff, make sure you save, use one of the items, see how much of a boost you got, and if it was crap, try again.
I guess.
Yeah. So, and the HP up thing was really annoying as well. Did you understand in the end what the HP 200, HP 400, HP 600s were?
Nope. I had no clue. I figured 600, oh, that's the better one. Let me just buy that one.
So basically, they would work well up until your character reached that level of HP. So the HP 200s would work, give you a decent boost until you got to about 200 HP, and then they'd become ineffective. Like you'd only gain like 1 HP from using them. And then 400 was, again, you know, up to 400, and 600 up to 600. But again, if you use 600 when you've only got 200 HP, you don't get a great boost out of it. So you're supposed to be using the right ones for your level.
I didn't know that. Son of a bitch.
Yeah, I know. I only figured that out late on. Yeah, but that's the human class. You have to buy your way to the top. Now, one of the interesting things about the stats in this game, Rich, is that on the screen, it only goes up to 99. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yep.
It actually goes up to 255. But once you get past 99, the screen can't display what's left. So you can keep on going and going and going until you hit 255. And if you go over 200, so like your human characters towards the end game can become seriously overpowered because you can break the limit. You can break the stats on it. But if you go over 255, then you go back to 1.
I didn't reach that at all. So it didn't matter to me.
No, neither did I. I think I got somewhere probably near to 200. And nope. I was just like, I'm too afraid to give these guys any more strength and agility just in case I go back down. Yeah, wasn't worth it. But yeah, that applies to all these characters. So the mutants, they level up completely at random. You'll finish a battle and you may or may not have gained some HP. You may or may not have gained some mana. You may or may not have gained some strength and agility. Now, the good thing about the mutants is that they have four. So all your characters, basically, they have eight slots. And like we said, humans have eight, and you can use all of them for whatever you want. You can use it for armor, weaponry, or items. The mutants, the first four slots are fixed and can only be used for random spells, which are randomly learned. So occasionally you'd learn your four spells as you go along, and some of them will be really good and some of them will be useless. I still have no idea what ESP does, Rich.
I don't either. What the hell was that spell for?
I don't know. It kept coming in. I kept getting ESP and I had no idea what it did. So ESP and Mirror Man, they were like the bane of my playthrough. At one point I had three mirrors. Because this is the annoying thing, is that your mutants will randomly forget. Like, it just doesn't matter which one. It's like one to four. It'll just randomly forget one and replace it with something else. So you could have an absolutely awesome spell like Gas. I loved Gas. That was a great one. Or P-Shot. And they were brilliant. And then suddenly, next time you go to use it, it's been replaced by Mirror. Hmm. And it's just like, oh, it was so infuriating. And because of that, they only have four actual item slots which you can use. So generally with mutants, you only give them one piece of armor because you don't want to use up too much of your item slots. And because True. Your mutants yeah. are your magic users, you want to fill the other three slots up with magic. Now for the long one, Rich. Monsters.
Oh my god, that was such a pain in the ass.
I know. So you didn't use monsters in the end, did you?
I did.
You had a monster. Right, okay.
I needed him because he had a certain special ability that I needed.
Ah, okay. Okay. So monsters, they level up and evolve by eating the meat of other monsters that are defeated in battle. So you get to pick your team, basically. It's suggesting the guide, don't have four monsters. It sort of tells you, try and have a balanced team. But yeah, apparently four monsters is like hardcore mode for this game. But you level up and evolve by eating the monsters, eating the meat that's dropped by monsters defeated in battle. So depending on your monster's level and the type of the meat of the defeated monster's level and the type of the monster being consumed. So you have three things here. You have the level of the monster and you have its type. Oh, no, two things. So you have your type and your level and the other monster's type and their level. And depending on what you consume will depend on the outcome of the transformation. This can result in which is sometimes a big increase in stats or sometimes a big decrease. Sometimes nothing will happen at all. So an example of this, Rich, because I know how confusing that sounds. So I've got a nice example here to try and get your head around it. You are a goblin, right? And you beat a big eye and it drops its meat. So goblin is part of the goblin group and is the level one creature for goblin group. The big eye is part of the eye group and is level four. So you've got goblin type plus eye type means you will become a fish type. Following along? I hope so.
My brain hurts.
Yeah, I know. So you've got the two types, goblin and eye. Apparently that equals fish. Now, level four, which is the eye, is higher than one. So the first thing the game does, it checks for any fish at level four for you to change into. But it won't find anything because there is no level four fish. It checks at level five and it doesn't find anything because there's no level five fish. So if there had been level five fish, that's what you would turn into. And obviously level five is higher than level four, so you get a nice stat increase. But if it doesn't find anything on level four or level five, it then drops down to level three. And it will keep going down the list, down the levels, until it finds a fish type. Now, in this example, there is a fish type at level three. It's piranha. So, your goblin has actually moved up to become a piranha. But if you was the other way around and you was an eye monster and you ate the meat of a goblin, you would drop down to piranha. It's so confusing. Yeah. It's just important. I found it important just to save between each battle. And then if I got something I hated, I would just reload my save. And be like, yep, I'll just ignore that next time I get into the battle. Yeah, and so, I mean, that's pretty much it for the gameplay. Let's get into the plot. So, the game dumps you unknowingly, not knowing anything what to do. You're at the base of a tower, and you're told it's the Tower to Paradise, and you've got to climb it. But first of all, you've got to unseal the base door. the Tower of Continent. This is a nice short one, Rich. Basically, you have to go around to all the towns. You have to gather the sword, armor, and shield of an ancient hero. You have to get these from the three kings who live on Continent. And then you have to place the items on the statue of the great hero. And then in doing so, you receive the Black Sphere. But then, who pops up and attacks you, Rich?
Some dinosaur thing.
Genbu! Who is, which it stands for, Black Tortoise.
What?
Yeah. I know all of the bad guys have really silly names, but they actually stand for something that relates to the color of the sphere that you're picking up. So the first sphere you get is the Black Sphere, and it's dropped by Genbu, which is Black Tortoise in Japanese.
Okay.
He's the first of the four fiends being controlled by Asura, which means divine being. But you defeat Genbu, you get the sphere, and you enter the tower. Now, this is where I keep going on about it. One of the quests with the king was that he tells you, and it's a human king, and he tells you that he's in love with the girl from the village to the south. And when you turn up at this village, it is a village of eye monsters. You know, that's the eye monster sprite, Rich.
He likes freaky.
Yeah, that's one freaky king. So you go around, you have to find the specific village girl that he's talking about. You know, she tells you there's a bunch of bandits and they're stopping her from marrying the king, and she actually does love him. You have to go kill the bandits and come back, and then she'll marry the king. And the king's very grateful that you're letting him have kinky bum sex with an eye monster. And how do you even have sex with an eye monster? Where is its orifice? Would you just...
Jam it in there.
Corner of the eye?
Yeah, basically.
I mean, she gets pregnant in Game Man as well. Like, that's really messed up.
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, this is the sort of weird stuff that happens in this game. So you help kings have sex with eye monsters. And there's all sort of weird other stuff going on, but that was a bit fun. But with your sphere, you're now able to open the tower and finally climb your way up to paradise. So you climb the tower, you get to level 5, and you enter Waterworld, and you transform into Kevin Costner.
Yep.
That's the end of the game.
Whoa.
Oh, drop your mic.
I did. Oh, sorry about that, everybody.
That's all right. This stuff happens. Yeah, so you become Kevin Costner. Basically, you have to do a load of shit to meet an old man who's called Ryu Oh. And you have to solve his riddle to obtain the air seed. He basically just tells you, you know, what's the cost of all these four items? You have to go buy all four items and then go back to him. And then he'll give you the air seed, which allows you to breathe underwater, which gives you access to the undersea palace. So you go through the palace, and then there's a room full of orbs. And each time you click on an orb, you get into a random encounter with a crab. But one of the orbs is actually the orb that you're looking for, and that summons Shi Ryu, which is the Azure Dragon. You defeat him and you recover the second half of the sphere. So he's the second fiend thing. He's the second of the four fiends, the Azure Dragon. And you get half of your sphere. So you go back to Ryu Oh. And he reveals himself to be the guardian of the other half of the sphere, and he gives you the other half, which becomes the blue sphere. See? Azure Dragon, blue sphere. It's all making sense now, Rich, isn't it?
I'm so confused.
How did you find the water world?
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, I used a guide. I'm just going to throw it out there. I used a guide for this whole thing.
So you didn't have any problems finding the floating island?
No, well, before I got into this part, when I got to this one, I didn't use the guide at first, and then I did after I couldn't find the damn thing for like a couple minutes, because I'd go through the caves, go all the way to the top, couldn't find what I was doing. I'd go all the way back, and I'd restock supplies, and I'd go all the way up, still couldn't find it. So I did that like twice.
Yeah, it's a pain in the butt, man. So again, you're on the water world, and there's like this cave system which lets you go to other islands on the water world, and on like surrounding these islands, just these little mushroom platforms which you can walk on. But one of them, just one of them. There's probably about, I don't know, 30, 40 of these things, Rich. You know, after you've been on the first three or four, you think, well, they don't do anything, so you don't bother going on the rest. but yeah, apparently one of them is a floating island. Now, it was my fault because I forgot. I didn't talk to everyone in the town, so I kind of missed the fact that I was supposed to be looking for a floating island. And that wasted probably about an hour of my game. But it was good because it meant I really beefed up around this point. Bill, my mutant, became an absolute beast because of the fact that I got I didn't know what I was doing. And I just got into a ton of fights. He levels up randomly, so yeah, he gained a lot of stats. He just completely shot ahead of the rest of my team. But yeah, no, that's the water world. So you get your blue sphere, walk up to the door. Now, to mention, Rich, as you're climbing up the tower, you occasionally pop, you occasionally bump into someone, don't you?
Yeah, some guy with a black hat.
Yeah, some guy in a top hat. And normally, he's just standing there doing nothing. He's normally standing by the door as well to the next world you're about to enter. And he gives you a hint on what you need to do in that world. So this guy is really, really helpful, Mr. Top Hat Man. But yeah, we don't know who he is. He's just like a mystery top hat guy. Because all men in top hats are mysterious. Or Abraham Lincoln. So we continue up to the tower. We get to the 16th floor. No, 10th floor. And we come to the world of clouds. And this world is dominated with an iron fist by Bayak Ko, which stands for White Tiger. So this is our third fiend, the White Tiger. And guess what color sphere we get here, Rich?
White?
Yeah. yes, so Bayak Ko and his army of thugs have taken over the cloud zone. And we learn that he's recently wiped out an underground resistance movement, except for two people, which is the daughters of its leader, and they are Millie and Jian. now, you temporarily join the White Tiger's gang to find the girls, and then when you find the first girl, you defend them against the gang. So, you know, you double cross. There's a bit of double crossing going on here. It's a bit fun. Millie then betrays Jian and the party by joining the other side, saying she wants power. and then, yeah, we're all captured and we're thrown into jail. Now, I did find this bit quite funny because there's a guy in the prison cell with us who's just like, God, I'm so strong, but I just can't bend these bars. And so you walk up to the bars, click on them, and yeah, you bend the bars.
Yep.
Just like, you're not strong, mate. You're an absolute weef. and yep, so you break your bars, you get free, and then you have to confront Millie and Bacco. Because I'm just going to call it White Tiger. I cannot say that properly. So you confront the White Tiger, and he tries to kill Millie, but Jian, who's the good one, jumps in front of the blast and to save her sister. So you kill the White Tiger. Millie's really upset about all of her behaviour, too rightly so, and we get the White Sphere. How did you find the Cloud World, Rich?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't too like overwhelming or anything, but it had a good design to it.
It was. The tower where the White Tiger lives was a bit of a pain in the butt because I didn't realize when you first meet him that you're supposed to exit the tower, and I end up walking around it twice. And you don't. The thing is, there's no random encounters at this point either, because this is the bit where you become part of his gang, so no one was trying to attack you while you're inside the tower. And I was just wandering around thinking, what have I got to do in here? But actually, I had to leave, and there was a nice airship waiting for me outside so I can get around to the rest of the continent, to the rest of the cloud world. I was just like, for fuck's sake.
Yep.
What a pain in the ass. And that was all captured on my Let's Play as well, so everyone heard my frustration. Oh, that was so irritating, just walking around. And there's like 20 guards in this place, and they all have the same dialogue text. Here we go. We've got our White Sphere. This is where my game glitched out as well, Rich.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, my game completely glitched here. And my save was like, it was a nightmare. I had to actually delete the game from my phone re-download it, rename it so it had a different name to what it had before. I then zipped up the save states, renamed the zip file so it would match the name of the new game, then unzipped the save state into the right folder on the phone, and then loaded up the game, loaded the save state, saved using the normal game function save, restarted the emulator, and then my save was working again.
You got lucky.
I have no idea how that worked. I was just kind of like shooting in the dark, just trying different things, thinking, if I rename it, redo this, redo that. But my name did glitch out a few more times afterwards, but nowhere near as bad as it was. I would just get like, I'd go into the menu, come out the menu, then I'd have a white screen and I couldn't see anything that I was doing. And then like around, you could hear the music and a random encounter would start. And I'd be like, oh my God, I've got no idea what's going on here. Man, but I was so pleased when I managed to save it. I was on the Fantasy Anime website about to download a save file that was at the same point of the game where I was, which was World 4, but it had a different party lineup. And I was going to have to be like, I'm so sorry. I didn't want to start again. But that's where I got messed up. Anyway, you travel on to the final world, the post-apocalyptic wasteland of the fourth world, the world of ruin, which is currently being terrorized by Su-Zaku, the vermilion bird, who just basically, every single time you get into a fight on the surface, it tries to kill you. And you have to keep running from it because it's so powerful. You meet, in the underground, you meet a girl called Sayaka, who directs you to the nearest town, and you protect her from a bunch of monsters. Then when you go into the town, there's a biker gang, and the leader, So Chow, tries to kick your ass because he wants to, but Sayaka intervenes, and you all agree to work together to try and beat Su-Zaku. So he tells you, basically, he sends you on a fetch quest to get some bits so that you can kill Suzaku's force field and then actually have a chance of killing it. So you have to go off, you have to get a ROM, you have to trade it for a board, and you have to go to the power plant, and in the power plant you have to get some plutonium. And in the power plant, So Cho turns up again, and he disables a bunch of like red spikes, this is all it looked like on the screen, which kills him, but it allows you access to get in and get the plutonium. So he dies, which is really sad. But when you leave the power plant and you finally got what's called the Arrays 99, which will disable the force field of the Vermilion Bird, you find out that he's attacked the town, everyone's been killed, and he's kidnapped Sayaka. So you have to go into another tower that's on this world to climb it, defeat the bird, save the girl, and then you get the red sphere. How did you find this bit, Rich? I know you only did it last night.
It was fine. It was easy.
Easy? Oh, yeah. Man. I got my ass handed to me a few times in this place.
By that guy?
Not particularly the birds, just mostly like just the area. I just found it like a real slog. I think I was just like, well, I just wasn't leveled up enough.
Yeah, but, I had grind up, you know, a lot of the money and stuff that I needed to do that. So by the time I was ready, I was fine.
Yeah, I had to do that after killing the bird. So I finally did it. I was like, right, okay, I really struggled there. I'm just going to hang out on this world for like an hour, grind myself up. And so that's when I started buying so many strengths and agilities for my two humans that they finally passed the 99 mark. And then started becoming all powerful beasts. Yeah, no, I decided to cheese it at this point. I knew I could go past 99. I was just like, right, that's it. Oh, so, yes, that's it. You get your red orb. You've got all four orbs. So you climb the tower to paradise. And then just before you get to the entrance, the final door, on the way up, you find the library, which suggests that Ashura is actually being controlled by someone else. Mm-hmm. And there's loads of dead kids in this library for some reason. I found that like really jarring. Just like, why did they have to be kids?
Yeah, that was weird.
Like, the child is dead. It's like, what? They're obviously trying to really hit you in the feels. But yeah, so, and you also find the nuclear bomb there as well, which is really helpful later on in the game.
I never used it.
No, I used it against the final boss, and it was a bit of a slap in his face. So you keep climbing, you almost get to the top, you're almost by the final door, and you finally confront Asura. Now he offers your team to take control of one of the worlds each, basically. So you've got four worlds, four characters, each one can have one. We refuse and we beat the crap out of him. Then we go to walk through the door and we fall through the trap door and hit the base of the tower. How annoyed were you at this point, Rich?
I was pretty annoyed about that.
Did the guides warn you that was going to happen? Because I didn't know. Yeah. I just suddenly fell down the thing and ended up at the base of the tower and was like, oh, yeah. Have I got to climb this whole thing again? And then, yeah, I sort of noticed that there was like a lot of characters there who we've met on our journey along the way, including the now pregnant eye monster. she is now with child. Yep. He got her right in the eye.
Hand it in there.
But yes, this time you use all four orbs on the door of the tower and it gives you like a back entrance and you climb the outside of the tower, and you have to fight all version two of all the four fiends again on the way up. So you work your way up, you kill all the bastards, and you finally get to the top floor and you meet the man in the top hat. He's just standing there. He's got a little bed. He's got his bed, got a couple of trees and a bookstand. That's it. What boring existence as a creator. So you find out from the top hat that he's actually the ultimate being, the creator, and you learn that the fiends and the tower itself are actually part of a game created by him to see if heroes would defeat evil. For succeeding, you would be granted a wish as your reward. But the party, angry at his manipulation, reject the reward and challenge the creator to a fight. Creator insists that he who created everything, and he could do whatever the fuck he wants. And then you have a big fight with him. How did you find the fight? Did you cheese it?
I wiped the floor with him.
Did you cheese it or did you actually fight?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
I didn't technically cheese it. I just used the saw and blew his ass out.
Yeah, that's what I describe as cheesing it. So there's an item you pick up in the tower called the saw, and with the saw,
I did not have that item picked up. I had a monster that had it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, what? You just had the ability. I did. Okay. Oh, you can't. Well, the saw is one of the items you can pick up in a tower on the way up.
Yeah.
I think it's between I don't think you can buy it, can you? I think it's only there.
No, you can buy it.
Oh, okay. No, I got it. But yeah, but the saw has this thing where, you know, it's got a 50-50 chance or something of instant killing things. A bit like Edgar's one on Final Fantasy VI. Where suddenly he'll get his chainsaw out and his hockey mask. Yeah, and if you hit the creator, he's weak. Everyone's weak to this, apparently. And you get, the creator doesn't even hit you for three moves, so you've got three chances of killing him before he even takes a shot at you. I didn't do this, Rich. I lost Tora, my monster. She died in this battle. And and so did Jenna, my female human. They really? Did not survive, yeah. But Chess and Bill... they were my beasts. They destroyed them. I'd saved all my good weaponry. I had my sun sword, my glass sword, Excalibur, and I was just absolutely beasting him. I only lost Tora went down pretty quickly because she was a monster, and she had some good abilities, but her defense wasn't high. But poor old Jenna, I just wasn't paying attention and didn't give her an elixir quickly enough. But yeah, I just managed to grind him down, threw the nuclear bomb at him, that did a good deal of damage, and yeah, beat his ass. So once you've defeated him, behind the creator is a door, and I wanted to walk through that door so badly, Rich. But your team decides, nah, we're not going to bother, we're just going to go home. And then the end credits roll. What did you think of the ending?
Yeah.
Hmm?
It wasn't really that like overwhelming or anything. It was kind of like, okay, yeah.
All right. I was so disappointed, man. I assumed you'd go through the door and it would kind of end there, and then that would like lead into maybe the next game.
Yeah, it was kind of disappointing.
Yeah, I felt a little bit deflated by it as well. I was just like, I always hate it when movies do that. It's just like, we're here, we're finally there. There's only one more door. It's like, nah, and let's go back downstairs. It's like, come on, guys, where's your sense of adventure?
Yeah.
You've just climbed this whole tower. Come on, do it. Do it. Kill it. so annoying. Yeah. Well, that's it. That's the plot of this game.
Yeah.
So, Rich, let's review this sucker, yeah?
Yep. Because we're about running out of time.
Oh, no, we're not. And I am really disorganized and haven't got my shit ready. I had everything else prepared, Rich, but not this. Not this. God damn it, why? So, what we're going to do is, Rich, we also need to do some score maintenance for ourselves. But yep. We'll do our scores first. So, how are you going to rate the combat of this game out of 10?
4.
4. Nah, didn't like it much?
Nah, not my thing.
Okay, right. Just because of how I'm doing this, I'm just going to go for all of yours first.
Okay.
What about the mechanics? You know, walking,
talking. Mechanics were kind of interesting. I'll give it a 7.
7, cool. How did you find the overly complex story?
That was boring. 2.
Oh, I liked it. Graphics?
For a 90s Game Boy game, I'd give it an 8.
8. I think that's fair. And the music? Again, for a 90s Game Boy game?
Yeah, 6.
6? Oh, man. And overall, what was your overall feeling of the game?
4.
4? You didn't enjoy it?
No, it was okay. It was just not one of like something I would really enjoy.
No, okay.
It kind of, I got bored with it towards the end.
Well, I can see that. but yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it myself. So that gives you an overall score of 31 for the game.
Okay.
We'll work that out properly in a second.
Okay.
For me, I'm going to give the combat an 8 because I loved the different systems. I really liked the monster leveling, although it was absolutely nuts. It was really fun to sort of explore it. Mechanics, I'm going to give a 5 because I found the menu system infuriating with the whole one item thing. Only being able to use one item at a time, only being able to buy one item at a time, only having very, very limited slots. It was very annoying. Story, I'm going to give a 7. I think it's very solid for a Game Boy game. I managed to squeeze quite a lot in there. Graphics, again, a 7. I'm quite impressed, but having played like Zelda Link to the Past, I think it's probably like the best looking Game Boy game I've ever played. And it's not quite up to that scratch. Not Link to the Past. Link's Awakening. Ooh.
Watch that.
Music for a Game Boy game, 1989, I'm giving it a 10. I've listened to the OST twice, and I am just so impressed with what Nobuo managed to do on this soundtrack. It's awesome. There's a lot of, like I say, there's a lot of songs here which sound like songs from late Final Fantasy games. I love it. I think it's great. So yeah, I'm gonna give it 10 out of 10. Overall, I'm gonna give it an 8. I found it quite an enjoyable experience.
Wow, we are way off.
Yeah, we are. But it's good. I like the fact it's different.
Yep.
So let me get up my calculator here when I work it out. So you gave it 31. I gave it 45, which is 76, which gives us an overall score of 63.33.
Nice.
Just going to make a quick note here. 63.33, which is actually, because we got a lot of user scores in for this, it's pretty close to what the users gave us.
Yeah.
So I'll stick that bit in now, even though I've got it further down. So, yeah, Winter gave it a 77.33. Beaver LA gave it a 39.16. He did not enjoy that game. Metal Max gave it a 75, and Mini BT gave it a 73.33, which is overall a 66.45. So nice. I think we're pretty dead on there.
I need a saga. What's the saga? It's songs for the deaf. You can't even hear it.
So, our listeners, we got some questions from Mini BT. What was your favourite? What is your opinion on having a different leveling system for each race? And did you have a favourite, least favourite?
I would probably say the mutants. Their leveling system was kind of good. I like the randomness to it. You didn't really have to think too hard on it. The least favourite was the humans. I did not care for that.
My least favorite was the mutants. I found it so annoying that I couldn't control my spells coming in and out. And my favorite was the monster, just because it was just so varied. It could completely change the way you have to play the game depending on what monster you would turn into. And I thought that was a great challenge. His next question is, do you think more games should try having different leveling systems for each character?
No.
I would say no. Let's leave that to Saga.
Yeah. It's too confusing.
Yeah, it does, because you have to. There's a lot of systems you have to learn. Admittedly, they were fairly simple, so it was good for a Game Boy game. Now, his third question is, assuming neither of you are familiar with Final Fantasy Legend 2, what is an improvement or change you would want to see made in the game?
A better story.
Maybe I'd like a bit more character interaction with your actual team. I know it's early on in the years of RPGs, but I prefer it when your characters are a bit more fleshed out rather than just, hey, yeah, I'm going to go upstairs. But in fairness, this game did that fairly well. There were things where you would interact with people and it wouldn't just be your main character talking, like, you know, one, like the person in the third slot would suddenly start talking to the Eye Monster King thing. Be like, hey, I can help you out of that Eye Monster.
Yeah.
But yeah, a bit more character interaction between the main cast, I think. Yes, and then my friend Troy, he also asks, the monster leveling system seems really weird to me. Did you see any benefit to the player of such a random leveling system, or is it all infuriating?
It's all infuriating.
Yeah, as much as I love the monster leveling system, Troy, it is just severely infuriating. Right, let's get into the reviews. So we've got some reviews from people. So Beaver LA, now he's reviewed this based on our scoring. So he wants to caveat two things before I start. He said it's been a few months since he's beat the game, and two, his biggest fault upon reflecting on his game is that he did not like it. He thought the combat was simple enough to figure out in the end, but not enjoyable at all. The mechanics were his biggest gripe with the game. Story was heroes climb a tower, blah, blah, blah. His graphics... he doesn't have much to reference it to, so he didn't really think much of it. Music, he says it's Naboo, which is, I assume that's a good thing. His overall feelings was that he picked up the game at a used game store because the dummies didn't know what they had, and it was in a 25-cent bucket. Wow. I know the importance.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, 25 cents. How much did you pay for yours, Rich?
Like 10 bucks.
Exactly. I know the importance for the RPG genre, but I really do think I will... I really don't think I'll ever play this game again. And as somebody who has never played any other Saga games, I don't know if I'll be playing any after this one. Ooh, savage. I'll play Saga Frontier with us. Pardon?
Who said that? No, that
was Beaver LA.
Oh, okay. I was like, I thought that was Deesa. I was like, really?
Nah, Deesa's next. Yeah, Beaver, when we get to, it's not far away, actually. Saga Frontier, that's the seventh Saga game. Play that with us, mate, and it'll change your mind, I reckon. It looks really, really good. So, Deesa's review. She says, for such an old game, Saga feels surprisingly fresh. Love the battle system. As she says, I love Quazu. No surprise there. It's weird, varied, and elements of randomness. It also feels very replayable due to the variation. There's tons of room for experimentation. The music is good too. I really don't have much to complain about, except it was hard to know where to go and what to do. Hardly a complaint, though, as the open world feel of the Saga games is one of the things I love about the series, and I don't mind using an FAQ or map when my poor orientation skills fail me. All in all, this was a fun adventure and one I'll probably return to later. There's more monsters to try out, new party setups, and new party setups to test. Metal Max J says, it took some time to wrap my head around some of the more exotic mechanics, but once I did, I developed a fondness for it. Plus, it's a pretty short little JRPG, about 14 hour-ish for my playthrough, which was a delightful breath of fresh air. And then finally, Mini BET, he says, despite having mechanics that are hard to understand at the start, Final Fantasy Legend is a short yet fun game that's worth trying out for its unique game mechanics, such as having a unique leveling system for each race. P.S. It's a Final Fantasy no matter what you say, Deesa. It's in the name. Oh, fighting words. Now, finally, Rich, we've got some boss scores to do. How would you rate the creator as a boss? Out of 100.
Seven.
Because you cheesed him. I'm going to give him a 35. He wasn't that difficult, and I did beat him on my first go. So I can't really say much else about it. Now, we actually forgot to do boss scores for Yeast and Phantasy Star 2.
Yeah, we did.
Now, I'm going to count this as Mother Brain, and I'm going to give her a 50 because she wasn't difficult. What about... Dark Fact from Yeast. What would you have rated?
I'll give him like a 15.
A 15 out of 100?
Okay, I'm just giving you a hard time. he was probably about a 60.
60, yeah. I'm going for 67 for him. Yeah. Cool, all right. I'll add that up later on. Excellent. So that's pretty much it for our Saga review. It's all over, Rich.
We did it.
What's the Saga?
On to the next game.
That's the Saga. It's the Final Fantasy Legend. So there we go, Rich, it's all done. Next game we're moving on to, Star Ocean, which looks really fun and bright. I'm really enjoying it so far, so I can't wait to dive into that a bit more. I'm also playing at the side Double Dungeons, because there's 22 bastard dungeons, and I want to sort of just try and cross a few off as we go along. So, Rich, if I was you, I'd do the same.
I got to find it first.
Find it? All right, we'll talk off air about that. I'll give you some help. But yeah. It's a bit of a bastard game, so I actually quite enjoyed the first level. I finished the first level, but I actually found it enjoyable. I was dreading it, so I just thought, I'm going to try this and see what it's like. Bashed through the first level and was like, that's all right. I imagine when I get to level 22, I'm going to be like, ah, fuck this game.
Yep, basically.
But yes, so this has been our Final Fantasy Legend review, everyone, or the Saga. If you want to contact us, let us know what you think on Twitter. You can contact me at Metunica, M-E-T-U-N-N-I-C-A.
And me at HailBlue1569.
Excellent. And you can contact both of us at RPG Years. We also have a Discord server. We have that pinned to the top of our Twitter if you want to find it. We also tweet it out occasionally. But come and join us on there. The community is growing and it's beginning to get quite fun on there now. Yeah. And I've got a lot of different topics and conversations we're all going through. And you can join in with the Final Fantasy VII Materia Lockdown as well. Rate and review us on iTunes or any other podcasting app that you use. That really helps expand the show. And we are slowly expanding, which is nice, Rich. I think we're up to about 60 listeners now. So we love you guys. Ooh. And if you really like us, you know, you can always sponsor us a buck on Patreon and we'll give you a shout out. And there's some other tiers there as well if you want to take a look, but that's up to you. So that's it, Rich. Big hugs. We finished another game. You actually finished this game.
I did.
So congratulations. So have you got anything else you want to say, Rich, on the Saga?
I'm actually kind of interested to see what the second one's all about.
What, the Game Boy one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we got Saga Frontier first, number 7.
Yep.
Yep. Which is straight after Double Dungeons. So Star Ocean, Double Dungeons, Saga Frontier, Saga 7. That's a bit of a jump for us.
Yeah.
But yeah. Okay, everybody. Thank you very much for listening. And yeah, we'll catch you all next week.
Yeah. We'll see you later.
See you later, guys. Don't get lost in the ocean of stars.
You would.
I would.
I'm Troidal Power, host of Troidal Power Presents, the Power Playthroughs podcast with Troidal Power. It's an audio-only Let's Play podcast where I play video games and tell you about them. It's like Twitch for your ears. You can find Troidal Power Presents, the Power Playthroughs podcast with Troidal Power on probablywork.com, geek2geekmedia.com, or you can look for me on Patreon to sponsor an episode. Troidal Power Presents, the Power Playthroughs podcast with Troidal Power. Let's play video games.
This has been a presentation
of the We Can Make This Work
Probably Network.
Follow us on Twitter
at Probably Work for more of our questionable content.
Also, we have a website called probablywork.com.